Welcome, everyone, to the podcast. So excited to have you aboard for this one. Matt Money Smith, the voice of the L.A. Chargers, formerly known as the San Diego Chargers. And I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get to why I fell in love with professional football. Numerous reasons. I suppose if the Chargers of the Air Coryell era did not exist, I would have fallen in love with the sport anyway. I kind of was there already, but this sort of cemented it. So I'll share my thoughts on that. But Matt Money Smith is going to join us. Andre Ware a little bit later. And I want to remind you, Freddy's Frozen Custard is aboard as well. And Steak Burgers, 16 locations, two new locations coming soon in Wallaceville or on Wallaceville Road and in Huntsville. New food truck custom designed to bring you the steak burgers, fries, and frozen custard you love to your event. It's a real game changer to get that original double steak burger, Freddy's Frozen Custard. Okay, let's start out here. As the Chargers moved back to L.A., I say back to L.A. because they were there in 1960. Very first season of the AFL, the Chargers were in L.A., then they moved to San Diego. They lost to the Oilers in the championship game of the first AFL season. They were going to play that game out at the Coliseum in Los Angeles, but TV execs were in fear of too many empty seats being on television, being a bad look for the AFL, so they moved the game to Houston, which was played at the old Robertson Stadium, Jeppesen Stadium, they called it at the time. Of course, UH has upgraded its facilities since then, but it was right there at the campus of the University of Houston where that very first AFL game, championship game, was played. Anyway, let's get to the voice of the Chargers. When they moved to L.A., they got this guy. We'll get into how they did it. Matt Money Smith.
Yeah, you know, I was very fortunate. It's, I guess, kind of a Hollywood story, right? They called me when they made the move up north. I had been calling both college and NFL games, and I think they were just kind of looking to turn over their broadcast, you know, and reset and, you know, kind of get established in the new market. And I've been doing a radio show here in Los Angeles since 2006 on the station, you know, in the iHeart network that they're on. And then prior to that, I was doing sports on a local FM morning show that was quite famous, Kevin and Bean on K-Rock since 1996. So I think they probably looked at it and said, well, here's a guy who's doing play-by-play and is pretty well settled into the market. And they reached out to me. And certainly I had some contacts. You know, we had done some stuff with the Chargers as a radio show as well because we had no team here in L.A., so they had kind of been partners with us. So there was certainly some familiarity there. And to make a long story longer and try to put an end to this answer that you probably just wanted a three-word answer for, they just reached out, and I said, absolutely, let's do it.
What about Daniel Jeremiah? Because we've had him on several times. We had him on for an entire season weekly at one point. What's it like to work with him?
He's the best. DJ and I have done a lot of work together at NFL Network and on NFL.com, covering the draft on podcast.com, digital feeds, on television feeds. And when Nick Hardwick decided he wanted to spend more time with the kids and it was just too tough of a commute for him coming up from San Diego. He lives deep San Diego, so it was a challenge for him to stay connected to the team after that first year. And as soon as he decided to stick down that way in San Diego and leave the analyst position, I think – you know, a number of names were thrown around. All of them were great. And when DJ's name came up, I didn't want to be kind of the guy that was pushing too hard because he's such a, you know, close friend of mine. When they mentioned it, I just immediately lit up and said, you know, if that's what you're going with, just stop the search now. He's the best analyst in the business. And I believe that wholeheartedly. I have not, you know, I've worked with Brian Baldinger, and I think the two of them are very similar in that they can watch a play in real time and diagnose it from so many different levels, line play, you know, where the help is coming from, what play should have been made that wasn't. It's sublime. I mean, it's hard to fathom how the human mind can work that quickly when there's 22 guys moving around on the field at once, yet he is so good at diagnosing what happened, why it happened, and what should have happened.
Matt Money Smith joining us, voice of the Chargers. So I imagine someday you'll tell stories to your grandchildren about this period in Chargers history, which is still in transition, playing in the smaller stadium, waiting for the bigger place to be available. What is that like? What has it been like ushering the Chargers into the market?
I believe it's the best stadium in the NFL, and I know that's going to be so hard for people to comprehend because it's packed full of opposing fans, but we'll never see anything like it, and it's too bad. I think in an era when more and more people are staying home and want that second screen, and are just too busy to sit in traffic or deal with a parking lot or wait in line to get in, that this could have been the model. Maybe not 23 to 25,000, depending on how many people are going to be allowed in for standing room. But it's such a unique experience. And I always tell people it's not that there isn't a bad seat in the house, because you can go to other stadiums and get great seats and say, man, I really felt like I was on top of the action. But the difference with this stadium where the Texans are going to play on Sunday is the sound. You can't understand how much different it is to watch a game without the white noise of 60 to 80,000 people there. You hear audibles. You hear conversations on the sideline. You hear coaches, you know, having discussions. And I'm not talking about being in the first five rows. I'm talking about, you know, when you're 20 rows up, you can hear those things. And it's such a unique and interesting experience that we're never going to have again. So I cannot, hey, if you're in Houston and you've kind of kicked around the idea of coming out, do it, because you'll never be able to experience anything like it again in this league.
That is very cool stuff. All right, let's talk about the team between the lines. What happened on Sunday? I know you had those final four possessions that they would like the end of back. How are the Chargers after that one? What's the feeling like around the organization?
I was surprised. And I guess because, you know, I went through it in 2017 when they lost so many close games in you know, manners which are hard to comprehend. And they were dejected when we would get on the plane to come back from Jacksonville, and Blake Bortles had thrown two interceptions in the final five minutes, and they had a lead and couldn't win. You know, that's kind of the stuff that they were dealing with. And it was a quiet, somber ride home. On this one, I'm not saying they were dismissive, but they were just like, man, we can't make those mistakes. You know, I mean, we felt like we moved the ball. The defense felt good about stopping the run. You know, Kerryon got loose with it a couple times, but overall, they just felt really good about how they played. And, you know, obviously Austin Eckler was probably the guy that was taking it the hardest. You know, that fumble was huge. You just cannot give up that ball on a first and goal from the one. And I think you go up two scores, and the way the defense was playing, they really would have been able to lean on, I think, another mistake from Stafford and just kind of bled that clock a little more. So I was surprised at kind of, I don't want to say they were upbeat, but they walked away going, wow. I mean, we had 450 yards of offense, held them to under 3.5 yards per carry, and yet somehow we only scored 10 points. We got to get that cleaned up, and we're fine.
Matt Money Smith, voice of the Chargers, with us on Texans Radio. Okay, so Phillip Rivers, last man standing for the time being from the 2004 quarterback class, with Roethlisberger out for the year and Eli Manning seeing the bench. What's Rivers like to be around on a regular basis?
He's the best. And yeah, I know I'm the play-by-play guy, right? And I'm biased, but man, he is an individual that loves football so much that it's just hard for me to and I guess if you're, you know, a Bronco fan or a Raider fan or something, you're tired of hearing him chirp at your sideline or get upset with the officials. But like, so after the game, right, we're walking on the plane, and I think this is just Phillip, and I'll try to do my best Phillip Rivers accent here. He says, hey, and two penalties with the touchdowns, legit penalties. It's like, yeah, I guess they were probably maybe not the one on Tevi that was a questionable block on that. Golly, I felt the same way. Yeah, and then I can see, but man, I thought that one on Tevi wasn't good. I mean, like, that's just how that guy is, right? Mm-hmm. He lived it, he breathed it. I've heard him having arguments with offensive linemen about which three wide receivers, if they could have any in the history of the NFL, they would want to make up their team. That's just how he is. I mean, he's a football geek, and it's kind of fun to be around knowing that here's someone who's probably going to go into the Hall of Fame relatively soon after he retires, to still be into it. Like, you know, DJ was watching college film on the way back on an Ohio State defensive end in Judy out of Alabama, and Phil was just walking by. He just stopped. He's like, hey, what are you watching? And just sat down next to DJ and just starts chopping it up about, you know, Judy's release. It's hilarious. I mean, he's that much fun to be around. He's just a total. I mean, he and I have gotten into conversation about flag football and his kid and Friday Night Lights in San Diego versus Friday Night Lights where I live in Orange County. I mean, he really is a joy to be around.
Is he still limoing into the facility from the San Diego area every day? How's he handling his life right now?
He does. Yeah, he's still, you know, they're settled down there. His son's about to start high school down there, and he's got a daughter in high school. So I think with all the kids, you know, kind of having their friend group and their peers. They didn't want to uproot him and pull him up north. So he has this sprinter van that's been converted essentially to a mobile film studio. So he just watches football film there and back. And it's about a, you know, 70-minute commute for him. So it's not too bad. And he loves it. He's like, it's, you know, by myself, I get to just kind of watch a ton of film and work on my game and study an opponent.
Matt Money Smith joining us, voice of the Chargers here on Texans Radio. Okay, what's the L.A. sports market like right now? The two NFL teams in the market. You've got all this crazy NBA stuff going on. You've got the Dodgers and the Angels. You have hockey, so two hockey teams. What's it like there in L.A.? How would you describe what kind of sports town it is or sports area?
Oh, it's a great sports town. You know, the Dodgers and Lakers, I think, have as dedicated and committed a fan base as any teams in the nation. You know, you take your Yankees and your Red Sox and whatever, your Bears, you know, when you think of those just kind of blue-collar markets and how they feel about their teams, those two teams dominate the marketplace. And it is hard. It's going to be hard for both the Rams and the Chargers to try to figure out where they slide in. Even when the Kings were winning multiple cups, I never really felt like they were growing their fan base a whole lot. I don't think hockey as a sport really expanded. You know, nothing like that happened. It'll be interesting with the Clippers if they can rip off a championship or two, whether or not they'll be able to grow. As far as professional football, I'll say this. I think the one thing it has impacted is college football. You know, the Rose Bowl and the Coliseum used to be pretty well packed with people for SC and UCLA games, and you've seen their numbers come down these last couple years and this year as well, especially for UCLA because they've been so bad. And I'm interested to see what kind of impact it's going to have on them and if that's where they end up taking, you know, some fans from. But right now, yeah, even though the Rams went to the Super Bowl, and I think everyone was like, oh, what are Chargers going to do now that the Rams went? And they got no way they're going to be the Clippers to their Lakers. And it's like, hey, man, the Rams and the Chargers are both Clippers. You know, if you want to put it into that sort of, you know, through that lens and look at it through that prism, they're both the Clippers when it comes to L.A. as it relates to the Lakers and the Dodgers. And that's what you're trying to figure out. And, you know, I've had a bunch of conversations about it, and I've said, look, there's a model out there. Now, can you replicate it? Probably not, but look at the Patriots. I mean, that team was ready to move. I had friends in Boston at the time. They didn't give two rips about the past. They might as well have not existed. And now they're the most popular team in town because they became a dominant dynasty. And that's a town that had the Celtics and the Red Sox. And I think L.A. is very similar, and it's going to take that sort of just stretch of, let's say, 5 to 7 years where this is one of the best teams in the NFL and you're competing for championships and maybe winning a couple, I think, before you're going to be able to kind of work yourself in that conversation.
One more for you, Matt. What's the feeling out there on the Texans and on this game on Sunday?
Well, the Texans certainly have things that give the Chargers problems. A very athletic and mobile quarterback. You know, Deshaun is the type of passer that gives them issues. And a lot of that has to, and it's going to be impacted even more. Not only are they down Derwin James, but now they're down Adrian Phillips, who was Derwin's backup. So you're probably going to see Rayshon Jenkins move up into that strong safety spot. And that's after an offseason where he lost 15 pounds so he could be more nimble playing free. That's going to impact him. The fact that you got two ends. And, you know, Sam Tevy has turned into a really, really good right tackle. He's young, but in his third year out of Utah, he's really become a great player on that line. Left tackle now, you got an issue. And obviously with the Texans, that's a big concern. So you've got to leave a tight end in. They've, I'll tell you, in light of this Melvin Gordon, you know, holdout, they've really had Austin Ekeler and Justin Jackson do a bang-up job in pass protection. So that's where the concerns are. I think the Texans, you know, probably match up pretty darn well with this team. Now, the flip side of that, of course, is how the Chargers feel defensively, you know, with Bosa and Ingram on the edges, knowing the issues that this team has had trying to keep Deshaun Watson protected and him maybe hanging onto the ball a beat or two too long regularly. So, you know, that's where the game's going to be won, I think. It'll be if Bosa and Ingram can win that matchup and make life tough on Deshaun Watson. And then conversely, if who is so good at overcoming deficiencies on the offensive line. But if it's just too much for him to overcome, I think that's how it tilts in the Texans' favor.
Great analysis. Hey, we really appreciate the time, Matt. Thanks a lot for joining us, and I look forward to seeing you on Sunday in the band box in L.A.
There we go. I look forward to seeing you as well.
There's Matt Money Smith, voice of the L.A. Chargers. Now, I promised you this. How did I fall in love with professional football? Not that you really want to know this, but you're going to find out right now. Now, it was the 1981 season, and I just started watching a ton of it. Really wasn't into it at all before that. But that was a great year to jump aboard. That was the San Francisco 49ers Super Bowl year, so they were on the rise. I mean, there are so many compelling stories. The quarterbacks, you had Ron Jaworski in Philadelphia, you had Richard Todd in New York. How was that Namath replacement going? Not very well, but actually that was a pretty decent year for them when you look at some of the good players they had with Mark Gastineau and Joe Klecko, the New York sack exchange. O.J. was gone from Buffalo, but you had Joe Ferguson as the quarterback there. You had the Dolphins doing pretty well in Miami with David Woodley, the late David Woodley at quarterback. This is pre-Dan Marino. And you had a team. One Monday night I'm watching, and I really don't know these teams well, but there are the San Diego Chargers against the Raiders at the time. And Dan Fouts was such a different-looking quarterback. He had something about him that I liked. He was kind of clunky. The ball didn't always come out pretty, but it got there. And Fouts back in those days would put up ridiculous numbers. There was a four-year period, 79, 80, 81, 82. He led the league in passing yards, passing touchdowns, just about every passing stat you can think of. Should have been MVP maybe one of those years, maybe the 1980 season. Now, they never got over the hump. You know, all about the Oilers going to the AFC Championship game in 79 and 78 before that. Well, the next two AFC Championship game losers were the San Diego Chargers, as in 80, the Raiders broke through. In 81, the Bengals broke through and lost to the 49ers. And that 81 season also featured the Chargers beating Miami in that dramatic, unforgettable 41-38 overtime game at the Orange Bowl in a humid wave. And then the next week in a cold wave at the Freezer Bowl in Cincinnati, minus 56 degrees wind chill, losing to the Bengals. Now, the Chargers also possessed what I say is the greatest fight song in the history of sports. You might not agree, okay? I mean, there are so many great college fight songs, but, I mean, what about when you got 70 Soul as your fight song? San Diego, Superchargers, San Diego, Chargers, San Diego. I mean, when you're playing that at the old Jack Murphy Stadium after a big Dan Fouts to Kellen Winslow touchdown, crowd going nuts, I thought this was really good stuff. Now, I want to be clear on this, that I'm not a Charger fan anymore. In fact, I was only a fan of that era. All those guys who played offense at that high level back then. And it fizzled out 84, 85. It just went away. Fouts wasn't as good as he used to be. Things were sort of changing. They weren't making the playoffs anymore. And it just, the era was really a four-year period of dominance by their offense and the defense really eroding over that time. And that's a huge reason why they couldn't break through and go to the Super Bowl. But anyway, a little Chargers history for you there as we're focusing on that squad this week. They're back in L.A. playing at a 27,000-seat stadium, as you heard Matt Money Smith talk about. Really looking forward to seeing that. Now, let's hear from my buddy Andre Ware as we look forward to the trip to L.A., and he's fired up about it.
I think it's a good road trip. It's a good test to go out and face a quarterback the caliber of Phillip Rivers. Now, they've got injuries and holdouts and all of the above, but I think it'll be a good test for the team and a tough test, especially, I think, with the Chargers coming off a loss in Detroit. You're definitely going to get their best. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and the Chargers had a lot of possessions down the stretch that they want back. Turnovers, missed field goals, that kind of thing. Now, as far as the Texans go, obviously wanted more points last week, but got the win. What about offensively? The running game is working well. What do they need to do to continue to do that well and improve in the passing game?
Yeah, I thought at times last week, the way Carlos Hyde was running the football, I mean, he's closing in on a 100-yard performance, 90 yards on 20 carries, that they would actually stay with the run a little bit more, and they had it pretty much whenever they wanted it. I think it's worth the offensive line or the investment in the offensive line to kind of ease them in comfortably, so to speak. And that's the best way to do it is to just run block and let guys come off the football. And when you're doing it with a degree of success that they were having with Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson at times, I thought maybe you stick with it.
Developing timing with the receivers. You know, QT's been out a bunch. You have Stills just getting here. He's made some catches, looked good. Hopkins is Hopkins, but they've got to find a way to get the chemistry generated, get in sync. And it's hard to do it in the flow of a season. What are you thinking about that?
Yeah, that's why, you know, I go back to the preseason and you look at the lack of reps in a game type situation, and it's hard to go from 0 to 60 miles an hour, so to speak, in terms of building continuity and chemistry. And that's what offensive football is all about. It's about being on the same page, building continuity within a group, and the group at some point functioning as one. And it's just going to take a little time because they didn't get the preseason reps together. Deshaun Watson played a little bit in the preseason, not very much. Will Fuller didn't play at all, didn't see Hopkins, you know, so on and so forth. And so even with the offensive line, which makes everything work in one instance, so to speak, this is a new group that hasn't played a whole lot of football together. So they're still learning everything. And if you can't get things up front to work together, then everything else around it, no matter how talented you are as an offensive group, it's gonna take some time.
Whitney Mercilus, 3 sacks so far, year 8 for him, and he's off to a terrific start, best start of his career. Why is that? Is he just more comfortable pass rushing from that side?
Yeah, I think so, and it's a situation where he knows that he's in the game. He knows that he's the starter, and there's some confidence that comes with that, knowing that you can be relied on in the coaching staff, as well as your teammates feel like you're capable of doing the job, and he has. And so that's why I think he's off to this magical start, so to speak, at outside linebacker. He's just playing with his hair on fire right now, and it's a lot of fun to see.
Yeah, and the other linebacker is doing well too. Zach Cunningham, I know you've always been a fan of him, but Ardrick McKinney doing well. And they're going to have to continue to do that to slow down this running game with Eckler and everything else that they're going to get thrown at them in the next few weeks.
Yeah, and then toss in Brennan Scarlett's name as well, because he's been close on a couple of occasions to having his name called in the sack category. So it's one a situation with him where he's actually there, forces the quarterback up, and then somebody else is reaping the benefits of a sack. But he's been close. Look for him to get one on the board or notch one on the board in his own right. But that group as a whole has played very well this season.
Dre, in the secondary, we know Colvin's gone, obviously, was for this game, and you get Roby in there doing some things and Jonathan Joseph, of course. But what about Lonnie Johnson? I know you watched him a lot in college, and he needs to really get going in a hurry as a rookie, which is tough in this league, but they need him, put it that way.
Yeah, I think against Jacksonville and a rookie quarterback with Gardner Minshew, he wasn't targeted. I think he's going to be this week. There'll be a lot on his plate. Phillip Rivers will identify him, and he'll test what's under the engine, so to speak, in terms of sending guys at him, trying to match him up formationally, so on and so forth. But I think Gardner Minshew was just trying to complete passes where I think a guy like Phillip Rivers, an experienced quarterback, will indeed identify him and see, hey, until you stop it, we're going to throw it over there.
Dre, Rivers is from that class of 2004, Roethlisberger out for the season from the same class, Eli Manning benched from the same class. I mean, I think it's impressive how long these guys have played, but Rivers is still out there doing his thing.
Yeah, when you get up to, you know, into the teens, so to speak, and you're still playing at a very high level. They've done a nice job of surrounding him with some talent. We know about Keenan Allen and the job that he's done over his 7-year career. Now you add, you know, a guy like Mike Williams, who's finally healthy, to that mix. You're right. It's impressive that he's been around this long. It's even more impressive that he's still playing at a very, very high level.
All right, so what about all these quarterback injuries? coincidental thing? I mean, it's got to be, right? Breeze, that was a freaky thing. Roethlisberger, you saw the highlight or low light in this case. It's just kind of weird how this is happening to so many guys so early in the season.
Yeah, I don't think you can point to one thing and say, hey, it's causing this. I think it's just the year. There's kind of accidents or injuries that happen during sometimes it's hamstrings, sometimes it's high ankle sprains, sometimes it's shoulder injuries from player to player, from team to team. You just get hurt. And I guess this is the year of the quarterback, so to speak, where you're losing some pretty significant ones and talented ones in a guy like Drew Brees and Ben Roethlisberger in the same week. It's unfortunate. And that's kind of a lot of it's all about timing, too. You just think back for a second. If the Texans were facing the Saints this week, as opposed to in week one when Brees wouldn't be there, and then he was there in week one. Needless to say, it's just unfortunate for those guys, but they will bounce back. Ben Roethlisberger will play again, as will Drew Brees, and Drew Brees has a chance to actually come back in a couple of weeks. So I don't think New Orleans is going to be out without him for very long.
You look at the young quarterbacks, though, in the NFL with Watson here and Mahomes and what Lamar Jackson is doing, and Murray looks like he's off to a pretty good start as well. I mean, there's a lot of hope for the future here, a lot of star power moving forward.
Yeah, there's a good mix, I think, of veterans and then young players who are coming into their own, so to speak. All the guys that you just talked about pretty much are guys they've moved. You know, that's what the position is kind of evolving to is a player that is not a stationary target that sits in the pocket anymore. It's a guy that can move around and make plays with his legs, a more athletic type player. And it's kind of made the game even more so fun to watch offensively.
Dre, what do you have on the college circuit this week?
Going up to Virginia. Virginia is a hot team. They're picked to win the Coastal this year. I think six teams have won the Coastal in the last six seasons. It's Virginia's turn. They're the only team that hasn't. Beat a good Florida State team last week, and they're playing ODU, who, you know, when I break down the film, I've been pleasantly surprised to see not only the team itself, but the size and the athletic ability that they display on both sides of the football. This will be a good matchup for me, and looking forward to it.
Okay, and I think the game plan of getting from Charlottesville to L.A. has to be one of the more under-the-radar, behind-the-scenes, you know, compelling stories of the weekend, perhaps.
Yeah, there'll be two Charlottes involved in the travel. Charlottesville to Charlotte, and then Charlotte to Los Angeles. So luck will be on my side. I got a feeling I'll be sitting right next to you when the ball's kicked.
All right, my friend. Looking forward to it. Thanks a lot.
All right, buddy.
All right, there's my friend Andre Ware. As that concludes our podcast for today, check out all the other podcasts here or wherever fine podcasts are available. And remember, Texans Chargers, 3:25 Sunday afternoon. We will talk to you on Sports Radio 610, the Bull 100.3 FM, the Texans app. Wherever you can get us, let's have some fun and go Texans.